Pippa Hudson, lines are always open on 021-446-0567.
Well, everyone's talking about state capture, but what about the possibility of school capture? That's a question being asked by a number of critics following the publication of proposed changes to the basic education laws. Essentially, an amendment bill was gazetted last month, which aims to limit some of the functions of school governing bodies. It deals with things like teacher appointments, pupil admissions, the language policies of schools. And the Federation of Governing Bodies of SA Schools has absolutely slammed the bill, saying if it is passed in its current form, it'll squash nearly all the powers of school governing bodies. FEDSAS represents over 2,000 school governing bodies. It's busy consulting members on the proposed changes and how to object to them within a rapidly closing window, it must be added. I have the CEO of FEDSAS on the line with us today, Paul Kolditz. Welcome to the show and thanks for your time.
Thank you and good afternoon, Pippa.
Paul, can you sum up for us what the biggest concerns are for you as FEDSAS around these proposed changes?
Well, there are four. The first one, the overall problem is centralization, a situation which takes us back to the pre-1994 dispensation, where you had an autocratic government prescribing each and everything that happens in schools with very limited parental involvement in some schools and almost no parental involvement in the majority of schools in the country. We've broken with that tradition, with that type of government in 1994, and the South African Schools Act was introduced with effect from the 1st of January 1997, which democratized the whole issue of school governance and management and gave parents their rightful voice in the education of their children. Now, the four major concerns we have with this particular draft bill is, number one, the issue of admissions, where for all practical purposes, the department will have the final say in the admission of learners to schools, and we already have the situation where your successful schools are overcrowded and very little is done with regard to the quality of education, the education management in the majority of schools in the country. The second issue is with language, where again, the department, without footing the bill for increased costs related to multilingual education, now wants the final say with regard to also the language of learning and teaching in schools, and also the right to instruct schools to adopt more than one language of learning and teaching. And again, without providing the necessary resources to be able to do so. The third one, and probably the most important one, is that the department will have the final say and the sole responsibility for appointment of people in promotion posts at schools. That means heads of department in the school, the deputy principal, and the principal of a school. No input whatsoever from the parents and from the school governing bodies. And then the fourth one, which is also of concern to us, is the fact that the department wants to make use of school facilities, the school property, for education-related activities without compensating the schools. For example, what happens at the moment is that schools are used as marking centers. They have to cater for the accommodation of the markers, hundreds of them in a single school. They have to provide catering, and if this is the true intention, schools will have to, from its own resources, then provide the department with all these facilities at no cost to the department. And that is extremely unfair.
So obviously there are potential financial consequences for schools in what you've just described. Paul, I think the major concern for parents would be the sense of parents' limited power to have a say in their children's education being reduced even further. You made a comment earlier about the fact that this takes us back to a place where few schools have limited parental involvement and others have virtually none. What is the reason that the department has given for proposing these changes? Are they worried that something is being done wrong by school governing bodies?
Well, if that was their concern, that school governing bodies are doing something wrong, then they have sufficient mechanisms in the Pleasant Schools Act to dissolve, even to dissolve governing bodies or to withdraw functions of governing bodies if the governing bodies are not executing those functions properly. The mechanisms are already there. The motivation is very vague. So vague that one cannot easily determine exactly what the motive behind this whole amendment bill is. One can only see that what the government is trying to do is to try and get more control over the schools, and that is a political motive, and that's exactly why we're calling it a school capture. Because they want to centralize all powers in government, the say that parents will eventually have in the school will be almost zero. School governing bodies will be relegated to glorified fundraising committees without any substantial or meaningful input in the education of their children.
If you've just joined us late to the conversation, my guest on the line is Paul Kolditz, who is the CEO of FEDSAS, the Federation of Governing Bodies of SA Schools, talking to us about some fairly sweeping proposed changes to our education laws, which were gazetted last month. Now, Paul, you've set out your concerns. The big thing here is the date for public comment. This is not a written in stone bill. It's a proposed amendment. And as such, there is a window for public comment where you can state any objections, but that window closes in just a couple of days, doesn't it?
Indeed, on the 10th of November, which is also quite strange. I don't know if it was coincidence or whether it was specifically planned that the bill was published for comment on the Friday, the 13th of October. And the closing date for comments is the 10th of November, which is less than 30 days. It's this coming Friday. One would want every single person who's concerned about school education in this country to provide comment to the department. The bill itself is available on our website, www.fedsas.org.za, for those people who are interested in having a look at it. And we've also provided on our website at the same place under what's new on the landing page a short summary of the provisions and our objections to it, which may guide people who want to comment on the bill.
One last question, Paul. Somebody asking on the SMS line, does this apply to private schools as well as government schools, or do these proposed changes only apply to government schools?
It's public schools, not government schools. That's precisely the objection we have. We don't have government schools in the country. We have public schools, signifying the fact that those schools belong to the public, belong to the community in which they are situated, and communities must take responsibility for that. So the bill applies only, or the proposals apply only to public schools, not private or independent schools.
Kerry Petrie is on the line, having called in from the Norcott Education Leadership Initiative. Kerry, if I'm not mistaken, that's an NPO that works with very closely with schools and particularly with governing bodies.
Yes, thanks, Pippa, for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to add a little bit to what Paul Cole from FedSats was saying, but also to challenge him a little bit on some of it, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
The first thing I wanted to say is just for the public to bear in mind that this is the first step in quite a long process of legislation amendments. So this particular amendment has now been released by the Department for Public Comment. It will go to Parliament, and Parliament is then under legal obligation to make it available for public comment again once the final draft has been submitted to Parliament. So there will be more opportunities for public to get involved up until beyond just the 10th of November.
Okay, that's good.
And also just to bear in mind that the Schools Act as it stands was from 96, and it was the result of a negotiated settlement. So there are some ideas in that that may not be working for schools at the moment, and it's important that we review legislation. I was very glad to hear the comment from George with regard to we haven't fully capacitated school governing bodies. We see they're not working. We're simply going to respond with a very blunt instrument and strip them of powers without proper consultation and capacitation. I think we need to be mindful that this is a nuanced bill, that government has come in and said there is supposed corruption happening in SGBs. SGBs are not functioning, but they are coming at it in a very blunt way. They're just simply removing powers and re-centralizing power in the department. The Jobs for Cash report that came out last year highlighted the corruption at a department level. So if we're simply going to say SGBs aren't working, let's give all the responsibility back to department, I'm not sure we're solving those problems.
Mm. That was going to be one of my follow-up questions, Kerry, because particularly if you look at the thing of appointing principals and deputy principals, if that power is to vest entirely with the department, it then opens up the question of who is the department going to appoint, and could they parachute in their preferred person for whatever reason, whether it's a good one or a corrupt one, without the community having any say, when there are potentially good candidates within the existing school community, for example, that they would rather see escalated. Besides the leadership issue and the potential for corruption within department, as well as the accusation of possible corruption within the school governing bodies, are there any particular elements of these amendments or proposed amendments that gravely concern you, Kerry?
Yeah, so the senior staff appointments is a huge concern for us for all the reasons you've just said. Another concern for us is the proposal that Section 21 schools, who've been allocated more responsibility to do some of their own procurement and purchasing, that's going to be re-centralized. So learning and teaching support materials, especially textbooks, are going to be re-centralized at the department level. And we've seen how well that's worked in the past. The other critical one that I want to raise, and I think it's really important that parents and community members are aware of this, there is a proposal that any parent, community member, or learner shown to be preventing a learner from going to school or disrupting school activities could face a 6-year jail sentence, which on first reading might seem fine because everyone should be going to school, but my question is, what happens if there's gang violence in the area and the community is forced to close the school for safety reasons? How are they going to apply that legislation if it comes into play? The other issue with that becomes a real concern for us is sometimes protest action is the only form that a community, by shutting down a school, it's the only way a community can get attention for a particular issue in their to draw leadership attention. And if now they're faced with a 6-year jail sentence, is this a rather cynical and subversive way to dampen down protests?